welcome to the Talking About Literature podcast. My name is Jack Ising.
I'm Kendall.
I'm Miguel.
Today we're talking about chapter 23 of The Scarlet Letter, the revelation of The Scarlet Letter. Miguel, would you bring us into the setup?
Well, in this chapter we have come to three plot lines. There's Dimmesdale, Hester, Dimmesdale in the Puritan Society, and then Dimmesdale and Chillingworth. And we have come to see how evil comes to corrupt how good people are in a society where, like, we see, Dimmesdale as a person of high standing, and he eventually succumbs to evil. And we see this in humans where we carry on guilt and in, like, we come to a point where, like, it's just, like, eating us from the inside, and we just finally come to confess our sin or our evil we've committed in the past.
Okay, and, like, we can ask ourselves, where have we seen this in the real world? Has this ever been seen before? It's seen all the time, but one of the most,
Prominent,
yeah, that's the word I was looking for. One of the most prominent situations where this has been seen was the whole Clinton Lewinsky scandal, where basically the president, Bill Clinton, was having an affair with an intern during his presidency. And it's kind of similar to the Dimmesdale thing, where he's held to this really high standard of being a minister but also being the president. People look up to these sorts of people, and they still find themselves falling into some sort of sin, or like adultery specifically. Where Dimmesdale, he eventually confesses his sin. So does Clinton. He does it in front of a grand jury.
Yeah, it was in with fear of indictment, to where he would actually be put on, like, trial.
Yeah, so a little bit of a different circumstance where Clinton doesn't want to be put on trial, so that's kind of the reason for his admittance, but
you could say that Dimmesdale was more,
he had finally...
Not heroic.
He accepted it finally and was able to say that, you know, this is a mistake I made. And it's really powerful because in the book, it's actually like some of his last moments where he...
It is his last moment.
Yeah, it's like right before he dies, he, you know, says these things, and it's kind of like this big, like, I finally let myself go. I finally got rid of all this self-imposed hatred. And he's freed. Yeah. And it's kind of seen in, like, the symbolism of his death.
I mean, you could also draw that with the Bill Clinton scandal in mind. You could say that Dimmesdale had more nuance, I guess, where he did it of his own volition, and he was expecting to be prostrated. Before the Puritans, but Bill Clinton, he had to be, like, practically held at gunpoint with risk of being sent to jail for obstruction of justice.
Yeah, so we see, like, Dimmesdale, he kind of reaches a different conclusion than Clinton does, even though it's a similar scandal. But either way, for both of them, there is still this fear of, you know, looking a certain way. Especially because, you know, Clinton was married. Dimmesdale, he's not married, but he's a minister, and the Puritans are, like, very strict on religion. That's the whole reason they made Hester wear the scarlet letter, the scarlet A. So
the point of the with
we see the fear in both of them.
Yeah. So here we go. So the chapter starts with Dimmesdale concluding a sermon to a crowd of Puritans, and after the sermon, he calls up Hester and Pearl, calling Pearl my Pearl, and he says to the crowd, hey, I'm the dad, bye-bye, and he dies, and it's revealed on his chest that he has some type of mark. We're not sure if it's a letter or if it was made up, but he has a mark, and he's dead, and then Chillingworth disappears. Okay, that's 30 seconds.
Boom,
30 seconds.
So hopefully you guys kind of understand what we're talking about now, especially, like, with the whole Clinton Lewinsky and that relation to what we were talking about in the book.
Yes. We're going to go on like a break really quick. And when we come back, we'll get into the actual discussion of the chapter and what and how it works. And now, a word from our sponsors, the Puritan Belief System. The Puritan Belief System is encircled mainly around hating yourself, your kids, your wife, your family, your dog, your cat, your bird, your fish, anything that isn't God. Save 25% when you sign up for Puritan.com when you use code LITBOOKS on Puritan.com/LITBOOKS. And now, back to the podcast.
After that brief word from our sponsor, Puritan.com, we're going to talk about Chapter 23 more in depth and how it ties back to the meaning of a work as a whole.
We should probably set up what the meaning of the work is, like, in order for the listeners or listener to
follow us better.
Yeah, follow us better.
So what do we think the meaning of the work is?
I think we all have like a general idea.
That powerful people can still succumb to sin?
Yes.
Something along those lines?
Yeah, it's still roughly the same idea. It's just a bit like looser with all three of us. What do you, Miguel?
Well, yeah, I believe that man can succumb to sin. People can go into evil, but then I believe that they also seek to get out of it, or like to, like we see in the book, he confesses. Where, like, two main parts where we see the book in the chapter is the scaffold, which is very dark. I have a exact text from the book here. It says, he had come opposite to the well-remembered and weather-darkened scaffold, where long since were all the dreary lapse of time between Hester Prynne and had encountered the world's anonymous stare. And pretty much, he paints, Nathaniel Hawthorne paints a picture of this dark, gloomy scaffold, which is supposed to, like, it symbolize some sort of, like, secrecy, somberness, and some sort of evilness that comes around the scaffold. And that's where it turns around in the other part of the chapter, where it starts to talk about the sun. This is exactly from the book. It says, the sun, but a little past its meridian, shone down onto the clergyman. This is being Dimmesdale. And gave a distinctness to his figure. As he stood out from all the earth to put in his plea of guilty at the bar of eternal justice. And this, at the end, shows a transition from the sin that took place into this more brightness, exposure, and truth that Dimmesdale pretty much succumbed to, pretty much did at the end of the book, which just shows that his confession towards a Puritan society shows just truth and exposure, which is some sort of like last reach to salvation, which he tries to achieve there.
I mean, yeah, you could say that Dimmesdale and Chillingworth's journeys are parallel or opposite each other. Whereas Dimmesdale starts in sin and he slowly tries to climb his way out, Chillingworth starts as like this like medicine man and a doctor and a hero,
a scholar,
a hero to all the town, and he slowly descends with one of his last words in the book being, thou hast escaped me. He repeated it more than once, thou hast escaped me, showing that he was driven mad by his need for revenge and wanting to learn who the father of Pearl was, who had in Puritan times stolen his property.
Yeah,
so talking about how, you know, Miguel brings up the importance of the scaffold, we know that it's important because Dimmesdale's last moments are on the scaffold. It literally says, meanwhile Hester Prynne was standing beside the scaffold. And then it goes into where Dimmesdale says, be it as God shall order, and God is more merciful. So the beginning of the book opens with Hester there, and we kind of see this character die on the scaffold. So we know that it plays some sort of importance in the book, and that it might be these last words from Dimmesdale that might say that Nathaniel Hawthorne is commenting on the Puritan religion and saying that, you know, these things have taken place, like, poorly and in a bad spot. But then Dimmesdale, some of his last words are saying God is merciful. So it might be a comment on the Puritan religion where it's saying this has been taken too far, it's too strict. But regardless of what you think, like, it might be his comment on, like, how he feels about religion and God and why he chooses to let Dimmesdale die, basically saying that he's not scared anymore.
You could also tie this into Hester being an unreliable narrator, where we don't know that is for sure what Dimmesdale said. He might have just said, hey, I'm gonna die, bye, and then he drops. But Hester might have interpreted it as, oh, hey, God's forgiving us, God's going to let us into heaven. There's no one that can back up her statements. It's told mainly from her perspective, so we don't know if
the book is told third person limited.
Yeah, third person limited of her perspective.
Mm-hmm.
So there's no omniscient narrator that can say, and Pearl thought this, and Dimmesdale thought this. So we don't know if Hester is just projecting the fact that Dimmesdale had managed to crawl his way out of sin onto him, or if he actually did.
I wouldn't say that Hester is an unreliable narrator, even though it's, like, third person limited. We kind of only get her perspective. It's not, you know, into her thoughts or anything, but it's from her perspective. I wouldn't say she's necessarily unreliable because she's a liar. I would say she doesn't choose to tell the whole truth about things all the time. You know, we see that with the whole, I'm not going to tell you who the father is, which can be seen as almost kind of, you know, not heroism, but a good thing, a good trait to have, because it means she's loyal to herself and to, you know, Dimmesdale. But I understand what you're saying, and saying, you know, she's not always reliable. She could be twisting this because she doesn't always, you know, tell the whole truth. There could have been more to what Dimmesdale was thinking or saying. But I think for the most part, you know, what she reported about this was pretty true.
So we come to see a same pattern, like we were talking about patterns in the book, and someone that comes close to Dimmesdale is also Hester. But the thing is, Hester is a bit more earlier into the book, where she comes to, you know, she comes to the high court, and they say, you shall be punished for your sins, because, you know, she confessed and Dimmesdale didn't. So she was like, she started off into, like, this dark spot where
I don't think she confessed. I think she was just...
She was pregnant. So yeah. People were like, your husband's not here.
Yeah. Your husband's dead, homie. Okay, where you at?
So, okay, same thing. Whatever. The truth came out. That's what matters. So then she came into this... She, like, finally acknowledged that she did something bad. She started working her way through it. Like, no matter, like, the pain she felt with the big red A she had on her chest. But then as she, like, got on with it, she, like, brought it on as, like, a sign of, like, I don't know, like...
Independence? Almost?
Yeah, I guess.
Independence from the community that she was shunned from, because even though she was shunned from it, she still helped them with the charity work and, yeah, like, sewing the dresses.
And, like, we see this, yeah, when she was sewing, like, most of her charity work came to, like, sort show her, like, she was kind of, like, slowly redeeming herself from, like, the act of adultery she committed, because no one before everybody in the book, everybody looked her down and, like, you know, stared at her. But as it went through, at, like, literally at the end of the book, people had come to her with problems in their relationships and stuff, making her seem like this glorified person. And I mean, I guess at the end of the book, yeah, she redeems herself.
So is what you're saying kind of like, like, about the whole, like, thematic topic, you know, anyone can, like, anyone can do bad things, but they also have the ability to be forgiven for that. And sometimes the forgiveness like being able to forgive yourself and being able to have redeeming qualities that allow other people to forgive you is more important than the fact you sinned yourself.
I mean, to just completely change the channel, I just thought of something. At the beginning of the book, Dimmesdale is like far above her in like the Mare's manner, like looking down on her as she's at the
scaffold.
Yes, the scaffold. Thank you. I forgot the word. The scaffold. And then at the end, he's below her, laying down on the scaffold where she was first placed in the book.
So is this tying back into the whole like redeeming qualities?
Redeeming qualities, yes.
Type thing. I think that it's really important to note that the book is probably suggesting something along those lines, that that's what Nathaniel Hawthorne's kind of getting at with this entire work, and specifically in this chapter where we see, you know, everyone's finally come to allow the truth to be told, and that can be seen as their forgiving quality, and that can free them. We can see that in like Dimmesdale's death. And also, you know, seeing how Hester's above the Mare, it's that's what's most important, is the fact that you're striving as an individual to become better.
Yes, yes.
So, in conclusion with that entire body, I think we're going to be doing some sacred readings, and this is where Jack is going to go through chapter 23, and he's going to pick a random page and just randomly find a sentence, read it, and we're going to break it down.
Just going to flip through these, and the first sentence my fingers lands on, we're going to have to discuss.
Yeah, let us know where that is in the book.
Yeah,
too.
I will. All right. Boop. All right. Page 240.
Oh.
It's in Hawthorne's like speech. He says, "Come, Hester, come. Support me up yonder scaffold."
Okay. Cool.
I think
that's
we got
Dimmesdale speaking.
Yeah, we got lucky with this one.
That one's good.
Because there's a lot of meaning behind it. It's him like saying, "Hey, Hester, come here. Come here. Let me tell you something." Like what's actually happening in the book is him saying, "Hey, come up here. Come like support me. I'm like gonna fall."
So yes, it's right before he kind of admits, you know, what the truth behind who the father is, just for some clarification. But yeah, on a literal level, it's literally him saying, "Hester, I'm getting on the scaffold. Get ready." Yeah. Like that's literally what it is.
Hey, I'm about to drop it. I'm about to drop the bomb. And then on a meta-textual level, it's him saying, "Hey, come support me as your baby daddy.
This is gonna be an emotional roller coaster.
This is about to get wild. Come here. Let me tell you a little something."
Yeah, we're a team. We're about to go through this together.
Yeah.
So it's kind of cool that we see this happen right here, and it says, "Support me up yonder scaffold," where he's admitting the truth on the scaffold. And we've talked previously about how important it was and how it's kind of this symbol for truth, because it's where all of it comes out. Earlier in the book, not in specifically this chapter, we see Dimmesdale, he actually confesses to being the father, but not to a group of people. He says it to himself in the dark, where no one's around. So it's seen again that the scaffold can kind of be this symbol of truth. It's kind of where everything comes out, even though it's meant to be this kind of weapon of humiliation, like especially for Hester in the beginning of the book. It's weird how the author chooses, even though it's meant to humiliate people, it's also where all the truth comes out and can be seen that maybe he's suggesting, you know, Puritans would rather hear what isn't the truth
than what is.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, we see the scaffold like three times, where the first one it's Hester, second time it's him in the dark, he's like whispering to someone, like you said, and the third one is just him dying onto it, right?
So how would you be able to relate the themes of this sentence of like supporting someone when they're about to, like, confess a truth to your real life?
Well, I think that, you know, everybody goes through a time where, they know that their friend may have, or a family member, anyone in relation to them, who may have done something wrong, and you may have, like, aided them and told them, you know, that's not necessarily the best thing to do, but I'm still here for you, and I'll support you in admitting the truth, because that's what's most important.
Yeah.
And, you know, telling friends that forgiveness is possible.
Yeah. So, I would like to recognize Dimmesdale. I would like to recognize Dimmesdale for being a symbol of what the Puritans believe should be, like, a perfect man. Like, he's kind, he's willing, and yet he still falls to sin. But in the end, he's still like, hey, God loves you, God loves me, God loves everyone no matter what. So that's what I would like to recognize Dimmesdale for.
Cool.
I would like to recognize Chillingworth for just being the embodiment of evil. He's not necessarily, like, I wouldn't call him a character at this point.
Chillingworth is the best.
Well, yeah, I would call him more of, like, yeah. I would just call him, like, an object at this point, because he's like a parasite upon Dimmesdale, and he's just, like, the tempter, and, like, he's the one controlling Dimmesdale in the entire book, and more like...
He's a finger puppet for the devil.
Exactly. He's just the devil's finger puppet. Exactly. Precise.
So, if we see that, like, Chillingworth is such an evil character, and it's kind of like, you know, what can he show us? What can he tell us? It's like the thought that letting yourself dive so deep into hatred and revenge tears you down more than it can tear down other people. Because in Dimmesdale's case, he already had self-imposed hatred. Like, he didn't need anybody else to tell him,
yeah, with the
hey, you're messing up.
Yeah, with the branding on his chest.
We don't know where he gets it from, but it kind of, you know,
implies.
You can kind of imply that, like, he may have done it to himself, especially because nobody else knows, so it's like, where would he have gotten it from anyway? But
it might have also been God, and it might have also been Chillingworth, we don't know.
But Chillingsworth, remember, there's the scene where...
Yeah, I'm dumb.
Yeah, Chillingsworth finds out before everybody else, and it's kind of the reason why Chillingsworth, as this fake medicine man doctor, is using his, like, practice to allow himself to torture Dimmesdale, because Dimmesdale doesn't know that Chillingsworth was Hester's husband, or is Hester's husband. So, we can see that from... Chillingsworth, he represents Satan, basically,
yeah,
the devil, and it, you would think that in a novel like this, the devil would come from the acts of sin, but it's actually the person who won't allow the sin to be forgiven.
Yeah, so who would you like to recognize, Kendall?
Oh, I'm recognizing my girl Pearl, because I feel so bad for her. She hasn't been recognized by literally anybody throughout the entire book. Like, obviously Hester loves her, you know, as a mother, but we also know that Pearl kind of represents this reminder that Hester kind of got her life messed up a little bit. Obviously by the end, because Hester still chooses to wear the Scarlet Letter A, even though she's been allowed to take it off, and she's still wearing it, even having gone to another country and coming back, she has become okay with all of this. But we know that throughout the book, Pearl basically just constantly reminds her, regardless of her love, that, you know, this has put you in a really, really tough situation. And in this chapter, there's a part where Pearl kisses Dimmesdale's lips without letting him. It literally just says after Dimmesdale dies, and he goes, my little Pearl, or right before he dies, says, my little Pearl, and Pearl kisses his lips, where she had denied him of it before. It's because somewhere in this chapter, Nathaniel Hawthorne makes the decision to allow Pearl to be represented as a full person. Because beforehand, her being a symbol had led her to kind of not even be fully human. And then it says that she's fully human now that she's finally been recognized by both parents and admitted, like, from Dimmesdale that that's his child. So letting her be this symbol is really, really important in the novel. And recognizing that is also super important because then we can come to understand the meaning behind her character and why she's so important, even though she says very, very little.
Yeah. So I think that should wrap. I think we're gonna wrap up
the sacred readings and the recognition.
Yeah, the recognitions and wrap up the whole podcast because we don't have anything less to say about this book. I mean, we do, but. That'll be for
this chapter.
For this chapter, we're done. So, thank you for listening. The Talking About Literature podcast. This has been Jack Ising,
Kendall Garcia,
Kendall Carmack, and Miguel Garcia.
And Miguel Garcia.
goodbye.